Welcome to Another Day Above Ground, a show for, by, and about baby boomers. It's the podcast for people who have no idea how to download a podcast. And now, here's your host, Dale Irvin.
Thank you, Farad, and hello to my housebound baby boomers. Yeah, we're still in the midst of a pandemic, but we don't care because today is another day above ground, and we're glad you're joining us here on the podcast we made just for you. There's three of us that put this together, so let me introduce them first. From the state of Indiana, the Aristotle of comedy, Mr. Tim Slagle.
Hey, Memorial Day weekend is a celebration for Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, as less people died of COVID than were shot.
Oh, and that's true, too. That's
it
the sad
not.
Part about it.
Is.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
it is.
My God, you guys.
And the voice you hear moaning at our life here in Chicago comes to us from Denver, Colorado. It's Carolyn Strauss.
And I just don't understand people. They actually, the mayor of Boulder, because I'm in Colorado, had to close the path on the creek for Memorial Day weekend because there were way too many people taking a walk. What? We're closing creeks. What are we, beavers?
You should all pick up and go to the Ozarks. That's where the fun is, man.
Apparently it was.
Yeah, that's just a big petri dish down there right now. Goodness knows what's. And most of those people are down there from Chicago, going down for the weekend and stuff, you know. So goodness knows what's going to happen, but at least we're still alive and well.
I'm glad they had a place to go to get out of the bullet.
Understand these people showing up at like mayors and governors' places carrying guns. You can't shoot this virus. It's not shootable. You can't just kill it.
The guns are for the murder hornets. They're coming.
Oh, got it. Okay.
They're big enough to shoot.
All right.
You know, during this lockdown, I think everybody's just been watching so much TV and so much, you know, binging on Netflix and Amazon and everything else. And the only reason we're doing that is because there's no sports to watch. Normally this time of year, we'd be in the basketball finals, the hockey Stanley Cup finals, the beginning of the baseball season, and we got nothing. So, you know, I didn't realize I missed it that much. Were you guys big sports fans all your lives?
No, never. I hated sports. Worst moments of my childhood were experienced on the field of athleticism.
And, please share.
I had no desire to relive it. It's I would always pick my dad. Even pick me last. I'd look out the window. I'd see him playing catch with some of the neighborhood kids. I'd grab my little cap and my little mitt. I'd go running out there, and that's when it was time to mow the lawn.
Here's what I don't understand. Every baby boomer I talk to says that they were picked last. How could we all have been picked last?
Well,
that doesn't make sense. We couldn't all have been picked last.
I was next to last. The crippled kid was last. But I was only into sports where there was very, very low possibility of being injured. You know, wiffle ball was a good sport for me, you know. But football, there was that you could hurt yourself. In baseball, they throw the balls way too hard, and that could hurt you. So I just tended to stay with you know, sports where I couldn't really. But then in the 60s, out came jarts. What could be happened with this big 12-inch, you know, 12-ounce darts that you hurled at each other with tremendous force? Carolyn, you got that look on like you've never played jarts.
I'd never heard of it.
Lawn darts.
I still never heard of it.
They're big darts, maybe about, I don't know, 16, 18 inches long with a big handle on them, and you threw them up, and the end was weighted, and they would come down either in a target or in somebody's foot.
Wow. We had croquet. Did you guys have croquet?
No, we weren't that rich. We had jarts.
It's not rich. It's mallets. It's mallets, balls, and little, you know, pieces of a chain link fence that you mold it into a little thingy to get the ball through. I was good at that.
Croquet was always fun for me because I used to get a big kick out of sending my opponent's balls into the dog crap.
That's beautiful thing.
Your croquet field had dog crap. That scares me a little bit, Tim.
Hazards. It's like a golf course. It's got hazards. You got to avoid them. You know.
I practiced a sport that I could play laying down.
What? Golly, what might that be?
Yes. I was an expert prone marksman.
Oh, wow.
I was a marksman. And
look at that.
Prone, no. I was brilliant.
That's a good line. I know a sport I can do laying down. That'll get a lot of people thinking, oh, boy, here's another story. But really, no. What did you shoot? Was that a 22, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Wow, very nice.
22. Yeah, I had a Winchester 75. I named her Jan because I liked that name, so I named my gun. And she went with me everywhere. So I had a gun on my shoulder half the time in school, and nobody ever arrested me because I had marksman practice after school. It was super fun. I was very good at that.
After the middle Brady?
Yeah. Yes.
So do you still shoot?
I do sometimes. Yeah, you know, my friend who has that house out, I told you, like way western Colorado. There's a whole shooting range set up. They have this whole huge property that these huge tires, you know, I don't even know where you find tires that big. Like, what kind of trucks have those ginormous tires? You know what I'm talking about.
Ginormous trucks. Yeah.
Yeah, ginormous trucks. So there are a bunch of ginormous tires, and you could set things up on the tires and put targets on them. And yeah, I actually still shoot when I can. It's super fun.
I like to shoot in my backyard, but I figure, you know, eventually they're going to sell that house behind me. So.
You're the cause of the mayor being upset in Chicago. I get it now.
But no, none of you dream. Well, Tim didn't because he didn't like sports. Do you ever dream of being a professional targetist? You know, you could
No.
be in the Olympics as a shooter or something.
I would have. I didn't even know that existed. I wish I had known. I also would not have quit the violin because I thought violin music was boring. So I played the violin when I was a kid. If I had heard the Dixie Chicks when I was a kid, I might have kept up on the violin because that's some cool fiddle music.
See, and it's a perfect thing to play if you're a mendicant on the street corner. Violin will get you much more money. You know, than a tuba or something. I'm just saying.
There's actually on Google, there's actually a prone archer.
Ooh.
She actually picks up the bow with her feet.
I've seen it. I've seen it. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It does it behind her head, right? Yeah. She shoots from behind over her head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I practice yoga. I can barely do a half back bend. Yeah, not going to happen ever.
I bet Dale's watched that one a lot.
In slow-mo, just to see all the intricacies. And Zoom, but you know, while we weren't interested in sports that much growing up, some people our age were. So we thought, you know, since none of us was ever a professional athlete, we thought we would have a special treat talking not only to a professional athlete, not only to a six-time Pro Bowler, but to a baby boomer. So please welcome to our show, Carl Mecklenburg. How you doing? Doing, Carl?
I'm well, thanks, Dale.
Yeah, it's great. Carl spent his career with the Denver Broncos and was a linebacker, which in football I would say is the baddest ass of the badass positions. That's a linebacker is somebody nobody wants to fool with. Ever, you know, you'll slap a kicker maybe if you have to, but nobody.
I used to carpool with Mike Horan, who was our punter, to the games and back.
Uh-huh.
We're going to the game and all the way to the game, he's got a blood blister on his finger. He had pinched his finger, putting in his screen windows for the summer, taking them out or something. And all the way, I got a cast on my hand. I had just had a pin inserted in my thumb. All the way the game, he's bitching about his pinched finger. I'm not hitting him with the cast. It was close.
You can't trust a kicker.
Yeah, I guess it would either be taking the screens out or he's a horrible procrastinator.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Now, Carl, are you a lifelong Broncos member? Were you there for your entire career?
I was there, yeah. I was there for my whole career. I was drafted in 1983, the same year Elway came in and Gary Kubiak and that group. I was... although I was not the first pick of the draft, I was the 310th pick of the draft, 12th round. They don't have the 310 picks or 12 rounds anymore, but that's what I was. And got a chance. Dan Reeves loved the underdog and ended up letting me see what I could do.
I know what that's like, man. I was always the last one picked when they were making sides up in school, you know. And so I could just imagine the Broncos there, you know, and the 12th round, the 300th pick. On who's left? All right, we'll take him.
Yeah.
Right. You think that was bad, Dale? The kid with the polio braces was picked before me.
Oh, man. When I got the phone call from the Broncos, it wasn't a coach, it was Jenny Ann, the secretary. I think they let her pick.
Now, Carolyn, as you well know, is a huge Broncos fan. She's also a huge Patriots fan. So, you know, she's that way. Yeah. But
I played 12 years in the NFL and never lost to the Patriots.
Really?
I'll let you know. Wow. Yes.
You never played them?
No, we played them every other year. You know, we played them a lot, but somehow we had their number.
Wow, that's good. So, Carolyn, Harold's got to be like a hero to you, a professional sportsman from Denver. You got to have a question you've been dying to ask him.
I do. So are you sick of orange and blue? It's a fashion question. I mean, you live in orange and blue.
Yeah, I do. And I'm a pheasant hunter and a deer hunter. I got my whole closet's full of orange. There's no question about that.
Orange is the hardest color for most people to wear. But as a Denver Bronco fan, I've made it work.
It doesn't clash with my tan.
Yeah.
Yes, I believe it's the president's favorite color. Someone turned his whole body to it, you know.
Excuse me, that's actually Cheeto Sunrise.
So, Carl, how many rings are you wearing, and what are they from?
Well, I got a couple. I've got two more in the safe. This one's a championship ring from '89. We played in the Super Bowl in '86, '87, '89. Didn't win any of them, but you still get a ring. And then the other one's a Ring of Fame ring. They put my name up in the stadium. And when they do that, they give you a ring, too. So,
and there's your picture around the outside of the stadium. You know, when you walk around, there's a big a drawing of you. I actually shot a commercial with John Elway last year at the stadium. And I'm walking around, and there's my friend Carl. I was very impressed.
There used to be one in the club lounge. They had me and Randy Gradishar, and they were like three stories high. It was ridiculous, this giant thing, but they're gone now.
Did they let you take it home for Kathy?
No, you know, I couldn't put it on my roof.
Now, you said you played in three other Super Bowls. You didn't win, but you still got a ring?
Yeah, you get a championship ring, it's called. So either AFC championship or NFC championship.
And then
the other team gets the world championship. So it's second place ring.
It's kind of like getting a participating ribbon in soccer, isn't it?
Not quite. Not quite.
Did you play all the years that Elway... It goes for more on eBay, though, Dale.
Oh, that's true.
Did you play all the years that Elway played? I mean, every single season that he played?
No, I played for 12. John played for 16. So after I got done, then they started winning Super Bowls. Right?
312. There's something to say for that.
Right.
Now, when I was looking up information about you, it came up, and this was rather odd, that your two nicknames were Snow Goose and the Albino Rhino.
There you go.
And so were you like the only white guy on the team, or?
Well, you know, I played in 6 Pro Bowls. In 3 of those Pro Bowls on the defensive side of the ball, I was the only white.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I love the Albino Rhino. And it said you've had, in the course of your career, 10 plus, because after a while you just forgot, 10 plus concussions. That
right.
Can't be good.
No, it's not good. The we didn't know what the impact was. I mean, you come to the sidelines, the trainer would hold up 2 fingers and he'd ask you how many fingers. And if you could remember 2, you said 2 and you went back in. Didn't matter if you saw it, because it was always 2.
Wow. It's because it's the Mensa football team, right?
Right. Hey, you know, it was our protocol. It was no good protocol, but it was our protocol. Things have changed. The game is safer than it's ever been. And when I have young parents ask me if they should allow their kids to play the game, my response has always been, if you have a young man like I was who is going to run into things with his head anyway, you might as well have a helmet on and some supervision.
See, I always thought the safest thing they could do is go back to those leather helmets, because then you're going to be there going, I ain't hitting nobody with my head.
Yeah.
It's not
there's something to be said. Yeah, and the game always changes. My grandfather played in the leather helmet days. He was a little All-American at University of North Dakota in the 1920s. And I remember watching a game with him when we were at his place for Thanksgiving. We're watching Notre Dame play USC. And I made the mistake as a 12-year-old boy saying that, Grandpa, these guys are really big. I don't know if you could play nowadays. My grandpa was about, you know, he was maybe 180 pounds, and he played center and nose guard. I mean, it's a completely different game. But he came out with, hell, boy, I played when it was a man's game. Didn't have no pads in my pants. Didn't have no face mask. Had to play both ways. Okay.
Grandpa, how many fingers am I holding up?
Always 2.
Didn't I recently hear you say the exact same thing to your son, Carl? I don't know.
Right? That's how I feel about it now. I mean, truthfully, the game has continued to change. And what I did for a living, I've got a little highlight video that I showed before I speak, and it's 90 seconds of stuff that would be fines nowadays. It's all, you know, it'd probably be, you know, 75,000 of fines. But hey, that's how we played. It was an intimidation game. It don't come across the middle. That's where I live.
Wow. Wow. So would you, and you would recommend it for kids today if they want to go in it, or just?
Yeah. Truthfully, yeah. There's a lot to be learned from any team sport, but particularly a team sport that is, that's physically and mentally as challenging as football. And every level you go up is more and more mentally challenging. The difference between a college all-star and a pro all-star is all mental. You know, there's a basic level of athleticism you have to have, but if you can't make the jump mentally, there's no place for you. It doesn't matter how big or fast or strong you are. If you don't know where to go, you can't get there, and you're not on a pro football team. There's a lot of guys that have great athleticism who can't make a pro football team. Happens every year.
You should make a speech out of that, man. That's very good.
Well, I've got the speeches. I just don't have the customers right now.
Welcome to my world.
Now, Carolyn, you had a question last week about if they reinstate the football this year.
Yeah, I'm just curious. So you played at what stadium did you play at? Was it the Mile High that we have now, or was it the one that they took down next door?
Right. This is the one they tore down and built the parking lot. They built the park. Right. That one.
Yeah. So did you ever play in this new one that's here?
No. No. I played a flag football game against the police once, but that's it. That's it. And I was actually coaching. I didn't play.
So. Yeah, how was the quarterback?
I was
I didn't say it because I knew it was coming out either way.
All right. So how much of the game as a player is determined by the noise of the fans and how they react to you, and how much is it only what's happening down on the field? Because it looks like if football comes back, the players are going to be all by themselves in the field. What's that going to be like?
Like practice. I mean, really? We every day of practice, we're out there, and if you don't do the right thing, everybody knows it, and it gets, you know, the pressure on you from a football player's standpoint is not so much the noise around you. Although as a signal caller on defense, I had to yell over the south stands, which was why my voice gets raspy at the end of a speech nowadays. It's just, I wore my voice out trying to yell over those folks. But the advantage is it helps you in the pass rush because the offensive line can't hear the quarterback either. So that's why you want your home crowd to be loud. So that those home field advantages will be gone, but you've got to be able to concentrate to play pro football. If you're in a situation where you're thinking about something else, somebody's going to take your head off. And I don't care if it's my grandfather's game or the game they're playing today. That's still the case. You've got to be completely focused on what's happening right in front of you. So whether the crowd's around or the crowd's not around, I don't think it'll affect it one way or the other.
Now, will you all have to, all the players will have to be 6 feet apart?
Yeah. No, actually, my understanding is there'll just be a whole bunch of testing going on. They'll test you every day, or, you know, check you with thermometers and what other kind of tests they can come up with to make sure that nobody's sick. But it's a risk. And I think the young guys are the guys that are playing now are a little concerned about that same thing. You know, if everybody else has to socially distance, you know, why not us? But then again, they're asked to do a lot of things other people aren't, you know, really doing very well.
It's only the elderly who are at risk. So the only one you're going to have to test is Tom Brady.
There you go.
Okay. But he's playing for Tampa now, so I'm not even the least bit upset. You know, screw him.
My understanding in Sweden, that it's just the old people that they're isolating. Everybody else can do whatever they want to do.
Yeah. They're getting rid of us boomers. Yeah.
Right. I'm only 59 and a half. I'm out of that 60 and over. Right?
No. You're a baby boomer, pal. You were born in the middle of it. Oh, yeah, you are. You didn't know? You don't have your membership card?
I am a baby boomer, but I'm outside of that risk factor for the Corona 19.
So you have like 6 months to catch it before it becomes fatal.
Right, exactly, before it's deadly.
But I'm thinking if they play, you know, in an empty stadium and it'll still be televised, that the coach over on the sideline, at least for once, he's not going to have to hold that clipboard up in front of his mouth so they can't see, because he'll have a mask on. And so he won't have to hold the clipboard so nobody can read his lips, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, there will be a little bit of difference. One of the things, there's a whole lot more cussing going on in practice than there is on the game field, because there's not all the microphones and stuff around. And I think that'll be an adjustment for the coaches. I think they'll feel like they're in a practice situation because there's no fans, but then the cussing is going to be
an
issue. There's going to be a lot of beeping going on.
I had a question here, and I lost it. I think I've had a concussion. Oh, what would you've already said that mental is a big part of the game, but you kind of got to be big and strong, don't you? I mean, you know, I'm a member of Mensa, but I'd get my ass kicked on a football field.
Yeah, well, I did say, I also said there's a certain level of athleticism you have to have. But what separates you as you move up through the levels of football is more the mental side of the game than it is the athleticism. I was a better college player than I was a high school player. I was a better pro player than I was as a college player. And it's all because it was more of a mental game each step up. As a junior in high school, I played junior varsity. I didn't even make the varsity team. I went to a Division II school on a one-third scholarship at Augustana College in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. They took away the scholarship after 2 years, so I left and I walked down at the University of Minnesota. I earned a scholarship there. I was a 310th pick in the draft of the Broncos. It wasn't athleticism that made me a good player. It was understanding the game and truthfully, more than anything, it was decisiveness, preparation, and taking the first step before anybody else did. If you can do that, you're going to be a great athlete, or you're going to be a great businessman, or you're going to be a great family man. It comes down to being decisive and taking that step.
That's yet another excellent point. You're filling us with far too much information than this show is used to. Usually it's just a lot of tripe and BS, but you're giving us actual real information. And what more could we expect from the albino rhino?
What would you say, Carl, to all the fans who are so disappointed and freaked out that they're not going to get to go to a football game this year? What would you say to them?
Yeah, it'll come around. It'll be on television. I'm sure they'll figure out a way to do that. They got some big salaries to pay, and it's just the way the game is now. It's interesting. If you look at professional football more than any other sport right now, it's very, very socialistic. All the money is equally divided between the teams, except for stadium income. That's the one place where an owner can separate himself financially from other teams. That's why there's such a push to build new stadiums. That's why they do all the bidding on the coaches, because the coaches don't have a salary cap. And if they have the best coach and the best team, then they're going to end up having to being able to make the most stadium income. Now, all of a sudden, there's not going to be any stadium income. So it's going to be communism. It's going to be straight. We're dividing this all up equally. It doesn't matter if we win or lose. It's whatever. It'll be interesting from a financial standpoint. Looking at that.
I think Lions fans are probably going to be relieved.
Yeah,
the sense of duty will be eliminated.
We're the people's team now. One last thing, Carl. If somebody's out there listening, that guy sounds like the perfect speaker for my next event. How would I go about getting a hold of him?
You just go to carlmecklenburg.com. You can misspell it numerous ways and still get there. It's got some video there and client feedback and whatever you need. My phone number, my email, whatever. If that's the place to go, carlmecklenburg.com.
How did you arrange it so you can spell it different ways and still get there? I mean, if you miss by one letter on my website, you go to a porn site, and I don't like that,
I thought you set it up that way, Dale. I'm confused.
Not originally. How did you do that to get it to?
Oh, yeah, you just buy the other names that are misspelled.
You buy all the misspellings. I did that.
And have it end, push back to your website.
That's a beautiful thing.
If you spell Slagle wrong, you can still get to timslagle.com.
Yeah, there you go.
Pretty darn. Well, there you go. We've learned so many tips today from six-time Pro Bowl linebacker, member of the Denver Broncos, winner of the Super Bowl, and without a doubt, you're on our Wall of Fame because, the only other guy up there's a juggler. And
that goes over well on a podcast.
Loser of the Super Bowl.
Winner of a bunch of championships.
Oh, didn't you win one Super Bowl or not?
I did not. I went to a couple they won, but I won it as much as Carolyn won it. I watched it on TV.
That's what you get for being picked last right before they take the busboy in the trap. Set your sights too high.
If you're Mr. Irrelevant, that's the guy who they pick last. They have a parade. They give you a car. It's a big deal. I didn't even get to be Mr. Irrelevant. I was 20 guys away from Mr. Irrelevant.
Carl, thanks so much for joining us here at Another Day Above Ground and showing baby boomers exactly what they could have accomplished had they really tried in their lives.
Thanks, Dale. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Carolyn. Great to see y'all.
Nice to see you.
Well, that wraps up yet another thrilling show here on Another Day Above Ground. I got to tell you, people, you are certainly getting more than your money's worth when you listen to this show. I'll tell you that right now. And if you want the perfect present for Father's Day, sign Dad up for the show and then just give him a card saying, I took care of this for the next year for you, and it'll be a perfect thing. Anyhow, that was it. We'd like to thank Carl Mecklenburg once again. And before we go, Carolyn, do you have any last words for our stay-at-home crowd?
I do. That if your kids are underachieving, don't worry. They can still be professional football players. I am so excited for all my friends with kids.
And Tim, how about you?
Just go to timslagle.com. And why don't you try spelling it wrong just to make sure it just proves that I did it.
And you can also go to daleirvin.com, IRVIN, because if you spell that wrong, be prepared for a surprise. Other than that, get out and celebrate, because today is another day above ground.
And that's it for another day above ground. For Dale, Tim, and Carolyn, I'm Farad Muhammad. Thanks for listening.